Chapter 30. Spire Albion, Habble Landing, The Black Horse Inn. Benedict fetched their drinks when the bartender waved at them, and Master Ferris seized his rather large mug of beer with obvious enthusiasm and began tilting it back at once. "Goodness," Gwen said, shaking her head. "I'm quite certain that a gentleman does not simply attack a drink so." Ferris lowered the mug and wiped foam from his upper lip, beaming. "No, indeed, he does not. Fortunately, I am absent any of the qualities that make a gentleman, and thus need not bother with the gentlemanly approach." He waved his empty mug at the bartender and said, "Another, Sir Benedict." Benedict, who had just sat, gave the old man a rather lopsided smile and then rose again, without complaint, to make another trek across the room and back. He came back with one enormous mug in each hand and set them both down before Ferris. The old etherealist beamed and said, "A man who plans ahead, foresight, always foresight, it's the first trait of any formidable person at all." "I just hoped to be able to sample mine before I had to get up again," Benedict said, and sipped demonstratively at his own drink. "How was your tea, Cuz?"
"Perfectly tepid," Gwendolen answered, but she added a dollop of honey to it in any case, stirred it, and sipped. Even scarcely warm tea was tea, thank goodness, and something that felt very normal amidst all the strange events of the past few days.
"Master Ferris, my word."
Ferris lowered the second emptied mug, coughed out a quiet, rather unobtrusive little belch, and smiled at her.
"Yes, child?"
"I take it that you are not obliterating your good sense for no reason whatsoever."
He narrowed his eyes at her and gave Benedict a shrewdly conspiratorial glance.
"Doesn't miss much, does she?"
"Despite what everyone tends to think, no," Benedict agreed in a polite tone. "I think she rather enjoys letting everyone believe she's too self-absorbed to notice anything that's happening around her."
"It's either that or let them think I'm some vapid twit, like Mother," Gwen said. "I simply can't bring myself to stoop that low."
Ferris nodded sagely.
"No, no, not a bit like your mother. Can't have that."
He took the third mug in a comfortable grasp and smiled.
"In fact, you are quite right, Miss Lancaster. There is a method to my madness. Well, to this particular madness, at any rate."
He took a deep draught from the third mug, though at least he hadn't finished it in a single gulp.
"And what would that be?" Gwen prompted him.
"You must understand something of what we do," Ferris said, "or this will seem like foolishness."
"We? Etherealists, you mean?"
"Precisely,"
Ferris said, with another politely suppressed belch.
"A great deal of what we strive to achieve happens as an instinct, I suppose one might say. We touch upon forces that others cannot sense."
"You mean the ether?"
Ferris waved a hand in a rather exaggerated gesture.
"That's simplifying a monstrously complex concept to its barest core, but yes, that will do. We sense etheric forces. Most people do, to some degree, though they rarely realize it."
"I'm sure I don't know what you mean," Gwen said.
"In fact, you do,"
Ferris replied.
"That gauntlet you're wearing, for example."
"Yes."
"What do you feel in it?"
"Nothing in particular," Gwen replied. "The crystal is a bit cool against my palm, but it always is."
"In strictest point of fact, miss, it isn't,"
Ferris said.
"If you found yourself a thermal meter and compared the crystal's temperature to that of your skin, you would find them to be almost precisely the same."
Gwen frowned.
"I assure you, sir, it is quite cool."
"It isn't," Ferris replied. "What you feel is the etheric energy that courses through the crystal. But your sensation of it is something Your mind was not sure what to do with when you first encountered it. A wonderful place, the mind. But if it has any kind of disappointing failure, it's that it always attempts to put new things into the context of things which are already familiar to it. So your mind apparently decided, upon encountering this new sensation, that it might just as well label it cold and get on with your day. And you are far from alone. It's one of the more common reactions to the first direct exposure to an intense field of etheric energy.
The crystal on my gauntlet tingles, Benedict said, nodding. A bit like when you've fallen asleep on your hand and the blood comes rushing back in. Though I'd never heard it explained in quite those terms before, Master Ferris.
That sounds like nonsense, Gwen said. Something is cold or it isn't, sir.
Ah, Ferris said, pointing a finger at her. I had no idea you had an interest in philosophy. Splendid!
I beg your pardon? Gwen said. I never mentioned philosophy.
Didn't you? Ferris replied. You just heard Sir Benedict confirm that his experience with a weapons crystal was significantly different from your own. There is but one reality. That is true. But the two of you experience it in slightly different ways. The older you get, I should think, the more you will come to understand that the universe is very much a looking-glass, Miss Lancaster.
Meaning what, precisely?
That it reflects a great deal more of yourself to your senses than you probably know. Rubbish.
If I look at a blue coat, I see a blue coat. The fact that I'm looking doesn't change that.
Ah, Ferris said, raising a finger. But suppose that what you see as the colour blue is the same shade that Sir Benedict sees when he looks at something you would call green.
But that doesn't happen, Gwen said.
Well, how do you know? Ferris replied. Can you see with Sir Benedict's eyes? And if you can, I should love to know the trick of it.
Gwen blinked several times. So you're saying that it's possible that when I see blue, he sees green?
Not at all. He sees the colour blue,
the etherealist said.
But his colour blue, not yours.
Gwen frowned. She opened her mouth to object again, thought about it, and put her teeth together.
And if Benedict does, then perhaps everyone else does too?
Benedict smiled down at his cup. It would do a great deal to explain the aesthetic tastes of House Astor, you must admit.
Oh, Gwen said with a shudder. Yes, those people simply cannot coordinate their wardrobes properly.
Now then, Ferris said, after another pull from his mug. That's something perfectly simple and relatively minor. Colours. What if other fundamental aspects of life seem quite different to others? What if their experience of heat and cold is different? What if they sense pleasure or pain differently? What if, to their eyes, gravity draws objects sideways instead of down? How would we know the difference, eh?
We've all learned to call the same phenomena by certain names from the time we are quite small, after all. We could see things in utterly unique and amazing ways and be quite ignorant of the fact.
That sounds remarkably slipshod, Gwen said. I'm sure that God in heaven would not have created the world and its residents in such a ramshackle fashion.
Ah, Ferris said, beaming. There, you are a philosopher already. A great many reasonable folk who have gone before you have put forth a similar argument.
The real question, of course, Benedict said, is why on earth it matters. After all, we seem to have a common frame of reference for blue, and when she says blue, I know what she's talking about, even if my blue is her green.
It matters because it is philosophy,
Ferris replied, with an expression of sly wisdom. If all philosophers took questions like yours seriously, Sir Benedict, they'd find themselves straight out of a career now, wouldn't they?
Gwen sipped at her tea, frowning some more. I'm not saying that I agree with your proposition, of course, Master Ferris, but let us suppose that you are correct for the sake of argument.
Let us suppose,
Ferris said. Then it would mean that, for all practical purposes, each of us lives in our own universe, Spire, would it not? Perceiving all of it in our own fashion.
Go on, Ferris said.
Well, Gwen said, if that is the case, then it seems quite remarkable to me that we've managed to establish any kind of communication at all.
Ferris arched an eyebrow.
Quick study, Miss Lancaster, very quick. Indeed, when we connect with our fellow mortal souls, something quite remarkable has happened, and perhaps one day, if we all work at it diligently and manage not to exterminate one another, we may even be able to see through one another's eyes.
He beamed. But for now, we'll have to make do with making good guesses, I suppose. Food for thought. He finished the third mug in another pull and waved for more. Benedict cleared his throat.
Master Ferris, I'm afraid we've wandered from the original point.
Have we? Why are you getting drunk?
Her cousin prompted gently.
Ah,
Ferris said.
He held out his empty mug to Benedict.
Would you mind terribly?
Your turn, I think, cuz, Benedict said easily.
Gwen sighed and fetched another pair of mugs for the etherealist.
Lovely, Ferris said, and gulped some more.
Perceptions of etheric energy change from mind to mind, just as you and Sir Benedict demonstrate with your weapons crystals. And if one changes one's mind, that also changes the nature of those perceptions. This will allow me to perceive those energies in ways in which I would not normally be able to do so.
You're getting drunk, Gwen said slowly, so that you can experience etheric energy differently.
Ferris held up his mug and said solemnly,
think of it as goggles for one's mind instead of one's eyes.
Benedict sipped at his drink, frowning. You think you'll be able to sense the Auroran's weapons crystals? Ferris waved a hand.
No, no. There are so many of those things about. It would be like searching for a needle in a barge load of needles.
Gwen turned her teacup idly in her hands and said abruptly,
you think there's another etherealist here, don't you? And you think that by changing your mind, it will be easier for you to find him.
Ferris nodded, though the gesture made his head wobble a bit.
Top marks.
He put away another mug, and this time his finishing belch was rather louder.
Extrapolate.
Benedict suddenly smiled.
If you could sense him, he could sense you. So you're also changing your mind to make that more difficult.
Ferris slurred his sibilance severely.
Astute, sir. Sincerely astute.
He peered down toward the bottom of his mug.
Though, I confess, I have not changed my mind quite this thoroughly in some time.
Why? Gwen asked.
I mean, why do you believe there's another person like you here?
Oh, it's complicated, Ferris said. Or I seem to remember that it is, at any rate.
The Auroran fleet, Benedict said thoughtfully. Their attack was precise, as if they'd had some kind of beacon to show them exactly where to dive through the mists.
Could an etherealist manage such a thing, sir?
I dare say, Ferris said.
Gwen set her teacup aside.
And have you changed your mind sufficiently to locate this person?
Ferris eyed her, and then his mug, unsteadily.
It would seem not. But it's likely a question of distance, methinks. If we get closer, I'll have a better sense of it.
And that's why you're contacting the local cats, Gwen said, to give you an idea of where to start looking.
Time, Ferris said. There's no time for a search pattern.
He closed his eyes for a moment, and Gwen thought that he suddenly looked several years older and several years wearier.
There's never enough time, you know.
Gwen traded a frown with her cousin.
Sir?
Ferris shook his head. He took a swallow from the mug and put it down again.
Time to slow down now, I think.
Gwen nodded and felt somewhat relieved.
Too much of such an indulgence can be dangerous, sir. What now?
Now?
Ferris sighed without opening his eyes.
Now we wait.
Is that wise, sir? Benedict asked politely. You do say that we're short on time.
We always are,
Ferris said.
At the moment, it is all we can do, I'm afraid. Best get comfortable.
Gwen and Benedict traded another look, and Gwen nodded firmly.
In that case, she said, I shall ask for properly hot tea.